porno parties, virgin vaginas, and your friendly neighborhood cam whore. This week it's death by cyber seduction. His secret life. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Netflix Martyrs. My name's Chris, and with us, as always, are the rest of the Martyrs. We have Pam.
Hey.
And we have Dee.
Howdy.
And we have Rob.
I need to get radical.
And we all need to get radical. After watching the Lifetime original movie, Cyber Seduced, His Secret Life, a movie about porn addiction. Speaking of porn addiction, does anyone have a five across the eyes they'd like to start off with?
I'll start off. I actually had two, and I couldn't pick my favorite. One was actually a direct quote from the movie. So the first one was my impression of the film, which is, teenager sees porn, ruins life. It's basically all you need to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a perfect summary.
And then this kind of sums up the whole theme, which has been said by the mother in one of my favorite scenes. She said, "The internet is getting scary." That's right, folks. The internet is getting scary. So beware.
I also have two, and one of mine is also a direct quote, but it has nothing really to do. So my first one is kind of in contradiction to yours, Rob, but yours is really a summary of the movie, and mine is just, bitches, not porn, ruin lives. And my second one is, gotta go with the green, because you just do.
So, gotta go with us.
We will get to that.
Gotta go with the green will be the name of the marijuana addiction movie on Lifetime that's coming soon.
Yes.
All right, I'll go. Wait, you had a quote, right? Oh, no, that was the quote.
That was my quote. I was also just going to say very quickly, and maybe this can come later in the movie, but I was talking to my dear friend, and she asked me what movie we were doing for this podcast, and I said, Cyber Seduction, His Secret Life, and her immediate question back was, is that a Lifetime movie? And I said, how did you know? And she said, it just sounds like one, and it sure does.
It totally does. My five across the eyes is a description of the movie, what I think the writer of this movie was going for. Requiem for a Money Shot.
And I'm going to buck the trend by having a five across the eyes that isn't funny. Sexual repression and frigid girlfriends.
No, that's
still kind of funny. That's still pretty good.
That kind of also is five across the eyes for most of my love life.
You can also call it blue balls for 90 minutes.
Yeah, you can blame your porn addiction on that, Chris.
I can blame my porn addiction, my porn and my podcast addiction on that. So,
or we could have just done, should have learned how to masturbate. That could have also been the five across the eyes for this movie.
So the movie starts off, we meet Justin Peterson, and I wonder if the use of Peter in his last name was intentional. He's a sophomore in high school, and the first time we see him, he's swimming. He makes like the state championship. He makes the big swim race at the biggest pool in town.
Also, we should have known this is going to be a good movie, because every good movie starts with a swim race. It really does. Swim fan.
Sorry, I never saw that movie, and I'm glad that I didn't.
That's tragic. Anyway.
Was it good?
Yeah. Oh. Jesse Bradford in it. Of course it was good.
So we meet Justin.
Okay, sorry, we've gotten off track.
Yeah, we went off track.
So we meet Justin. He's a swimmer. He makes states. He's got this girlfriend named Amy, who we find out very quickly is down with the G-O-D. She loves her some Jesus. And an interesting note is that the mother, Diane, is played by Kelly Lynch, who, if you've seen Roadhouse, you've seen Patrick Swayze rail her against a rock.
Not the rock, though, just a rock.
Unfortunately.
That would have been a much better movie. I think at that point, The Rock was probably like, what, 12?
Ew.
When did Roadhouse come out?
That would have been his secret life. His cyber seduction.
I have no understanding of how old The Rock is, but I assume he was not that old when Roadhouse came out.
No. But we find out that one of the girls in school, a senior named Monica, is basically a cam whore, I guess, is what they were going for. Mm-hmm. Though
it's what they were trying to do. But I think even they realized just how creepy that was, and so they didn't actually go that far.
Right. He basically just gets sent pictures of her in, like, a sweater, a turtleneck. Like, she's never
Yeah, but they're really
naked.
Tight.
Yeah.
There's some where she's flouncing around. And then there was one scene in the movie where someone was like, oh, you know, his Bible-thumping girlfriend, who, of course, doesn't put out because no Christian girl who is worth her weight in anything ever puts out. Ladies at home, take note. And she says something about, have you seen her page? I hear she does stuff on camera on it for her boyfriend. Ugh. And everyone in the school doesn't. So I think they imply that she, like, I don't know. I think they imply there's more risque stuff than we were ever allowed to see on Lifetime.
She, like, blast the nips.
Yeah, totally yeah. Blast the nips.
Well, that was the thing, because we were about halfway through the movie and realized that any scene that they showed with her was technically probably child pornography by the legal definition.
It's true.
She could be 18. She's a senior.
I think she was 18, probably. Yeah, let's just go with that.
Like,
that makes it feel weird.
I don't think anyone in my senior class was 18 when we graduated.
I was.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think most people are.
I didn't turn 18 until December of that year. Oh, well, then again, I'm young and...
Well, while we figure out if what we saw was legal or not...
Justin is invited by his friends to a quote-unquote porno party wherein they sit around and they look at porn. And it's not just a bunch of dudes. There's, like, dudes, there's girls. There's a whole nother party going outside. But a bunch of the weird little trolls are just sitting in the basement looking at porn. And this is where Justin gets introduced to the wild world of pornography. Any of you guys ever been to a porn party?
He's like practically a senior in high school, and he looks at it like, people have sex on camera?
He's a sophomore.
This kid,
okay.
He's hanging out with the older crowd.
It's not
this
much better.
This kid clearly had not heard about the birds and the bees up until this point in his life.
Even though he has a computer in his bedroom.
Yeah, but he also has a very close-knit family unit and a mother who loves him a lot, so he hadn't looked at porn until now. He was, you know...
Yeah.
Because kids who have parents who love them don't look at porn, also. He didn't know it was wrong until he started getting in a lot of trouble for it.
And introduced his, like, 8-year-old brother to it.
That is also true. Oh, also, I just want to point out that the actress's name for who played Monica was Nicole Dicker.
That was intentional.
That was also
clearly intentional. It was not her acting performance that got her that role.
No, they picked her because of her last name solely.
Do you think porno parties exist, or is it like one of those things like like teenagers huffing Freon that like one person has ever done ever, and it shows up on Dr. Phil and just scares housewives? Because that's what this movie is designed to scare housewives.
Yeah.
It is, but...
I would be very surprised if this thing was like a regular occurrence in any society, in anywhere in the country. Because it's just so weird. Like, I don't know what you're getting out of it.
I guess I just... Okay, see, this is where my own problem comes in with this movie. There's a lot of problems I have with this movie. Just the warped view on sexuality in general. Like, just, you know, the women's opinion of sexuality in this movie versus the men's opinion is just so... You either... Like, the two women you have in this movie are the ones who are so appalled by pornography that they can't even, like, understand it. Or the ones who are so desperate for male attention, they're basically willing to do anything. Those are the two women that exist in this world. And then the guys are like, you have the guys who can just casually look at porn, and then the super addicted kids who see it and they're like, oh my God, I never noticed female bodies before, but now all of a sudden I'm seeing sex everywhere.
AKA puberty.
Yeah, puberty. But, okay.
I mean, this movie really is fundamentally about a kid who hits puberty at the age of 17.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he just kind of takes it a little too far. I think my problem with this, the porn party in this sense, where it's just a bunch of dudes being like, oh, look at this hot stuff. I want to see these two chicks make out. And then the girls in the room clearly feel uncomfortable and they're like, oh, that's gross. You're so gross. Like, but I mean, porn is funny. And if you can hang out with your friends and watch porn, that is funny. I don't see a problem with that.
This feels like a rationalization less than an explanation.
It's both. I guess. I don't know. I don't have to explain myself to you.
Pam and I have definitely watched porn in the same room, in a group of people, in a completely non-sexual way.
Yeah, because it was just really bad porn. There was nothing, like, I don't want to meet the person who would have found the porn we watched, like, any kind of enticing. Like, I don't want to know that person. And maybe it was a way to weed out of my friend circle anyone who would like something like that. Because then I wouldn't hang out with them anymore. I'd be like, fuck you, you're gross.
The logic of this movie, clearly that means you're a bad person.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm a total turbo slut who needs to validate myself.
Well, I mean, in this movie, if you're
a woman, everyone knew that.
If you're a woman in this movie, you either hate porn with all of your being or you're in it.
Yeah. Those are the two classes of women in the world, I'm pretty sure. You either love Jesus and you hate sex and looking at other people having sex, and or you just like to have sex with everything. You're liable to hump a table.
Just how, I think the audience needs to know just how unsexy that porn we watched was. Do you remember the scenes in it? I remember the old people having sex.
Guys, I don't think I need to know how unsexy that porn was. I don't care about the audience right now.
Can we talk about the opener where it's like the fat guy in the diaper going, and then there's like the clown, and then there's like the midget who's stripping on the table at this like really, it's kind of like a porn meets the Texas Chainsaw Family, like, Family Massacre.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
It's like a creepy backwoods family doing all of the weird fetishes ever.
Are you guys
sure
you weren't just watching Deliverance?
It needed a scene where they have a girl, like, at the head of the table, and they keep handing the decrepit old grandfather a dildo to bludgeon her with.
Okay, the prune one, though. The prune one was the fucking worst.
I'll never unsee that.
There's no way this
ever
happened.
Do you remember the Easter Bunny who just kept saying, Jesus is rising? Do you remember that? Or Christ is rising, I think he said. The Easter Bunny, it was like the Easter Bunny, the alien, and like Santa Claus having sex with this girl. And the Easter Bunny was like this weird old, like, kind of Russian guy. And his one thing that he kept saying was, Christ is rising. It was really awkward and weird.
A part of me kind of wants to call bullshit, but I'm afraid you're just going to send me a link.
Oh, no, it's real.
It's real. Oh, my God, sorry.
Do you think we could make that stuff up?
No, I'm not.
No, that's a good point.
I want to find this now. I kind of don't, but I kind of do. All right, you guys talk amongst yourselves. I'm going
to
look for this.
Wait, one of you guys still has to own that movie, right?
Caitlin does, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, there you go. D, if you want it, we can get it to you.
No,
we can have a special showing for you.
I'm going to politely decline.
We'll put it on
at home. Maybe we can do our first live podcast where we like play the movie and you play it at home and we just talk about it.
I'll burn it on CDR and label it in really big Sharpie block letters.
I'll just burn it at that point. God.
All right, so let's talk about how... I mean, the mother starts to find out that, or she suspects he's up to something because she walks in on him one night kind of, you know, looking at porn. And I want to talk about how porn slash the internet in this movie is kind of portrayed before we move on, because this came out in 2005. And this movie's idea of the internet is like this magical place where I think Hackers has a better idea of the internet than this movie does.
Yeah. I mean, Hackers has this sort of, like, fantastical backdrop on how hacking works. And the stuff that they do with computers isn't really all that realistic. But at least it doesn't treat it like it's, I don't know, a gateway to the hell dimension.
I also will give the movie credit that it never like, spewed technobabble at us. There was never a point where someone was like, oh, you can hack the ISP by uploading a GUI with your flimflam.
That, like, is kind of what happens, though, remember? Because he does, quote-unquote, hack the school library.
Okay, that is true. They do say he hacks the firewall, when it really all he does is...
Is bypass the firewall.
No, he puts in a thumb drive, and all of a sudden he's like a major hacker.
Yeah.
Which honestly, like... In the context of what's probably happening, if this were real, is he's just got like some kind of proxy software on there that lets him.
Or maybe he just has like pictures that he saved that he's just bringing up these like little pictures on it. It just was like,
I don't know.
It didn't seem very technological, but of course it got busted big time.
They repeatedly make references to the evils of internet pornography, and the way they say it always seems to imply that it's the fact that it's internet pornography that is the problem. Like. You know, if it's just a magazine, nobody gives a crap. But the fact that it's that internet, you know, we can't have that.
I mean, in a sense, I agree that internet porn is a little bit more. I mean, it's more than a magazine. I mean, if you look at a Playboy, the boobs aren't moving. They're just sitting there. And it's, I mean, internet porn's a lot raunchier, and you see pretty much everything in motion, and you kind of see the entire act, whereas in a magazine, you're not going to really see the entire act. You're going to see stills from parts of it. So it is a little bit more, I would say, invasive than a magazine.
The movie definitely has this ancient kind of like the good old days view of porn, because Kelly Lynch gets the dad to talk to Justin about his use of porn, and the dad at first is like, so he's looking at porn, he's 16, that's what 16-year-olds do. And when eventually he's forced to talk to his kid about it, he says like, yeah, we used to, you know, when I was a kid, we used to hide our Playboys under the bed. And he talks about it like, ah, those were the days before porn got internet-y and weird.
Well, but he's not even really doing that. Like, he's got a kind of reasonable response here. Like a boys will be boys. You know, this is just the next step in how people... Like, it would be like if the mother was complaining about her son watching movies. And the dad's like, well, you know, back in the good old days, we used to read comic books.
I mean, I don't think the parents were ever supposed to be that old. Although, I did find it kind of funny that they're like, oh, these kids are so tech savvy, they can hack around all of this programming. But, I mean, I've been using a computer since I was, like, however old, and I don't think I could hack myself around some software. I'm not that good at anything. But
that
also,
just makes your tech savvy very similar to the mom's tech savvy.
Because she clearly
works with a computer at her job and doesn't know how to check her browser history.
But that's the thing. Yeah, the mom is... I know how to check my browser history, sir. Anyway.
that was
what I was going to say, is that these kids are so like, oh, because they're young and they grew up with a computer, they can do fucking anything on the computer. But the mom, who's like, I don't know, late 30s, early 40s, she's not that old. I mean,
and she works
like,
with computers.
I know. She like looks at the computer like it's this foreign object. Like, the internet exists? What is that? What is this gateway we're opening in our house? I don't understand how to install this basic software in my computer. I set up the internet on here somehow, and now I can't figure out how to work it. It's just like, I don't understand why they're trying to make her seem like she's a 90-year-old woman trying to learn, like, I don't know. Really.
The files are in the computer?
Yeah. Exactly.
I also love the escalation of software use in this movie, where it goes from him inserting, like, really crappy little disks into the computer to eventually using a flash drive.
He is using a flash drive.
It's like somebody woke up and realized it was 2005.
Well, that's when he got serious about his addiction, okay, D? He was like, I really gotta feed my porn addiction, and these discs just aren't cutting it. I need more gigs.
He couldn't handle 24X and had to jump up to flash memory.
Exactly.
I think I was still burning CDs in 2005.
I was definitely still burning CDs in 2005.
I was using a flash drive, but yeah.
I was burning mixtapes in 2005, so you can't... Come on.
Were you burning mixed cassette tapes?
No, I meant CD. Shut up.
Ah, okay. Just check.
So the first time the family is quote-unquote threatened by porn is when the brother walks in on Justin watching porn. And I want to say, you know, when you hear you walk in on someone watching porn, you have this image of, like, catching the person, pants around their knees, like, dick in hand. There is never any masturbation in this movie, or even, like, the idea of it. He's just literally addicted to looking at porn.
There's no, like, over-the-pants touching.
Yeah. The way it's presented even makes it seem like the addiction is in, like, scantily clad women. Because he has a few, like, daydreams and, you know, actual dreams and just kind of general hallucinations of, like, you know, almost naked women around him while he's doing stuff, like while he's at a swim meet and stuff like that. And so, like, it's almost like this movie doesn't even want to imply or get on the subject of masturbation. It's like it's too scandalous for the, like, 50-year-old housewives who are going to be watching this movie.
Yeah,
I think
they don't need to show it for the audience. That's the thing. It's like scary enough that a kid who has good grades and who's a star athlete is going to spend all of his time, you know, researching and looking at this crap, this garbage, you know, that's what everyone is calling it. You brought this garbage, this crap pornography into our house. Like, for the audience this movie is made for, it's already scary enough. You know, the internet is a scary thing. They don't know how it works, you know. And then when the thing that their kids are doing this and lying to them behind their back. Like, this is the movie I'm so glad my mother never saw.
Yeah.
Because she would have freaked out. You know, is it true when you go out to parties you're looking at pornography on the TV, drinking stolen beer? And it's like, well, no. But, you know, these movies, this is like the fear, the intimidation of, like, the unknown that their kids are doing.
But that's what, like, is, again, another offensive thing about Lifetime movies in general is, like, they always make the heroine of these movies is, like, the super neurotic, kind of guilt-trippy, like, I used to trust you, and you let me down, and you should have come to me for help, and this could have all been avoided if you had just listened to me or talked to me. They're, like, always the most, like, hypersensitive, super, like... But they're always right. It doesn't matter how neurotic or how guilt trippy or how, like, kind of manipulative they are. They're always in the right. Like, the only
way that could be a whole other topic is just, like, Lifetime movies in general.
That's true.
Like,
yeah. That's true. But, I mean,
they were all episodes someday.
Which, I know, but I'm just saying she fits the bill to a T. I mean, she starts out the movie kind of cool, like, oh, like, my sons and I get along really well. And then she becomes like, oh my God, he's looking at porn. Something's wrong with him, clearly. And then, you know, no one pays attention to her. None of the men in her life are paying attention to her. Like, her husband's like, oh, he's just a kid. Her son's like, oh, I'm just a kid, mom. I'm going through a phase. She's like, no, there's something wrong here. And then she talks to her other female friend who's like, it is going to be a problem. His life is going to go down the shitter. And then lo and fucking behold, it does, because of course they're going to be in the right here.
When you said that, when you said that they get angry because they brought porn, like, he brought porn into their lives or into their household, you're not being hyperbolic here. That's an actual line from the movie.
Yes, exactly.
Like, they make it look like being addicted to looking at porn is like being on meth.
It's like a disease that's going to disrupt the entire family. And what, if nothing else, are these movies built on is the fact of, like, the perfect family unit, and something's coming to destroy it, whether it's, like, infidelity or domestic violence or mental illness, whatever these Lifetime movies try to hit on. This one just happens to be a teenager's natural interest in women, and he... You know, it's showing that it's super scary that your kids are looking at this stuff. And then it reaches beyond your teenage son. Now your 9-year-old son is looking at it. He's shown it to his friends. You know, it spreads like a virus, and it infects everyone involved. And, it, you know, his life starts to suffer. And
yeah, I think
that is the dangerous thing.
I think that's a really big
danger.
Sorry. My speaker just went out for a second. You're right. It does look like a meth addiction, because it's not just a normal progression. And, like, I am not saying that I don't believe in porn addictions. I'm sure they exist. I'm sure that happens to people. It's hard for me to wrap my brain around, but I get that it could be there, and people do get like that, and they just want porn, and that is what they need, not actual physical contact. I don't understand it, but I get that it's a real thing. But they make it seem like it is basically going to end your life, because it's the movie, you know, starts with this kid bloody faced and falling into a pool, and then it's like 3 months earlier, and so all of this transpires in 3 fucking months. Like, he goes from going to his first porn party and then just being, you know, the lowest of the low at the end of it, and I don't think anything's that traumatic.
They treat it like his meth spiral. Like, he got addicted to some really hard stuff. And 3 months later, he's, like, you know, trying to suck it off of a bathroom floor or something.
Yeah, and some of this is definitely the parents' fault. I mean, they said he was grounded, yet he's still wandering the streets going to internet cafes later on in the movie. Like, your kid's fucking grounded. Make sure he's home and in the house. I don't know why that's hard.
And then the fact that, like, she drives him to his ex-girlfriend's house by the end of the movie, and then just lets him walk home afterwards, where, you know, hilarious, beating the shit out of characters.
I want to touch on something Rob said real fast. The reason this movie is so evil to me is it sensationalizes and demonizes something that I think is a very much a rite of passage to your average 15, not even 16, like 14, 15-year-old boy. Like, there comes a point where when you're going through puberty, you just want to look at a boob. You just want to see some titties. And that's pretty natural.
Yeah.
And like the dad said, it's not something new. It's been for generations. You know, you try to see some titties. And it's healthy to do. And this movie makes it seem like an unhealthy thing.
This isn't your average kid who looks at a boob and, like, gets the fuck over it. This isn't that kid. I mean, there are plenty of kids that they showed in the movie who are like, oh, we watch porn, but we're all well-adjusted human beings. Like, this is the kid that watches it and suddenly his mind is warped and he can no longer tell reality from porn and he stays up all night just, like, throwing back caffeine drink after caffeine drink so he can stay up all night and, like, look at these things. Like, they're going for the extreme. And you're right. No, it is evil. It definitely is, because it's saying, like, it makes you think that your kid is going to be that one.
It's a sensationalized PSA to frighten, you know, these women that are watching. And I just say women, these people. I know Lifetime is a network for women, so I'll say mostly moms watching this and going to have very awkward conversations with their teenage or preteen sons after watching this movie. And it is not really fair. And the movie is just, of course, not really very well done. So as we move on, we get, you know, awesomely bad dialogue. We get a kind of a murky plot. You know, the Christian girlfriend really comes into it. So I think now we've really established what the movie is trying to say about pornography, is that the internet is making it so that it's accessible all the time. You know, you can get more and more and more porn. All you need is a credit card. All you need is access. And the pop-ups, to me, were just hilarious. Like, that used to always be, if I was over at my friend's house, and we were, like, you know, 12, 13 years old, and it was, like, downloading a dirty image from, like, Napster or, like, LimeWire, and you would, like, download, like, one picture, and it would take 20 minutes. If it came up, we always knew that we could just be like, oh, pop-ups. I don't know how this happened. These pop-ups are just crazy.
Yeah.
Because, like, we had that free AOL disk. Like, sometimes you would just get a dirty pop-up for no reason. And this movie takes it to the extreme in certain parts where it's, like, pop-up hell. Like, picture after picture after picture. Like, XXX and join now. And it's just like, what's going on? And it's, again, like, it's the internet is attacking them. It's kind of like Branded, except this time the internet attacks.
But okay, but at the same time, I like that their biggest concern in this whole thing is, like, the spam pop-ups that they're getting. Like, not the fact that they could be, their computer is probably riddled with viruses and going to explode at any given moment. Like, the next keystroke, the thing is just going to explode with...
The virus thing, that was too sophisticated for the writers. They didn't think about the aftermath of the pop-up.
Well, I want to talk about the brother. We went on an excellent tangent there, but so the brother comes in and he says, all right, don't tell mom, I'll show you this. You can't tell anyone. And then there's this really funny cut.
It's a great scene.
And the little brother is just, like, traumatized. Like, what the hell did he show him? He showed him, like, Mr. Hands or Two Girls, One Cup. Just something terrible. And this ties into what Rob was saying, too. It's this unhealthy view of sex. It's almost puritanical. That our society is trying to cultivate, because to cover up why the brother is all weirded out, Justin says he just beat the drug dealer in Grand Theft Auto. He's a little, he's got, like, coming down from an adrenaline rush. The mother won't let anyone look at a damn titty, but she'll let her 8-year-old son play Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Well, that's a general problem with, you know, I guess society in general. The fact that we're completely okay with kids being exposed to violence. Now, granted, GTA is a mature game, so...
Oh, yeah, 17 right?
A good house... Yeah, I think so. So, you know, a household that is properly raising their kids isn't going to show... Let them play, like...
It's like it's like an R-rated movie, but again, you
yeah, exactly.
You that like, but in real life all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's like... So that, in that point, that movie... You're right, Chris. That was an interesting... kind of point to make, that mom knows the son's playing the hyper-violent Grand Theft Auto and is like, oh, well, good thing it wasn't porn and it was just a violent video game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The video game.
Because I wouldn't want you to have a skewed view on relationships.
The video game where you can fuck a prostitute in a car.
Yeah, I remember that scene too, and I was kind of thinking, like, is this supposed to be like, is this a joke? Is this like a weird social commentary thing they're doing, or like, what is it? Because the mom's response is, "Oh, nice," and she's being sarcastic. She clearly doesn't care that her young boy is playing this game that she must know is violent, because there was a huge controversy about that game being so ultra violent and kids playing it. Like, that was a huge thing.
I mean, I feel like we were kind of brought up in that too. It's like, I played violent games, and it was like, I would be in much less trouble seeing me playing like Resident Evil than seeing me watching two people having sex in a movie. And that's just kind of what freaks Americans out, I guess.
Yeah.
A quick slice of life thing for me recently. I don't remember how it came up, but my mother and I were talking, and some of you guys know that I'm really big into horror movies, and that happened because my grandfather used to show me horror movies starting at age 4 to scare the shit out of me. He thought it was funny. But I always grew up loving horror movies, and going back as far as I can remember, like 3rd and 4th grade, if I did good on my report card, my mother would let me rent a horror movie, like a Friday the 13th or something like that. And it just came up recently. I don't remember why, but she was like, "Yeah, I used to rent you Friday the 13th when you were in like 4th grade. But I would get really mad at you if I saw you watching Beavis and Butthead." And then she stopped for a second and was like, "What was wrong with me?" And I thought about that when I was watching this movie, this kind of like priorities, where do they lie? Just in the person's own weird head. And she's projecting those beliefs onto her kid. And like I said, the mother who watches this is going to fuck her kid up.
Sex is very real, and violence in a lot of these movies is so over the top. You're like, well, my 14-year-old son, I can't think of him going around and like running people over with a car, stabbing people in the head like in these video games, shooting people. But I could maybe imagine him awkwardly fondling a girl under her shirt, over her bra, and thinking about porno movies. And that's real and scary because he's older and I can't handle it. And I think that's where it kind of goes to, is like, it brings it to this very real place where it's like, oh, my kid's never going to grow up like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's like, that's hyper real. And like, porno stuff is just too real.
I think, you know, that her argument in the movie, and I can see this, to an extent, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can understand the point of view. She is like, I just want him to have a healthier view on relationships, basically. I don't want him to think it's all this, this sex and this, like, I don't want him to think it's all physical and, just what is she going to do for me sexually versus us in a relationship and there being like content, like context and stuff behind it. So I get that. I also, going back to what Chris was talking about, I think it's also too about like what we're told to be scared of versus, especially as a parent, like what you're told to be scared of versus what you just accept. Like, your mom just accepted horror movies because they've been around for so long and, they're just a part of our culture. But she was told to not like Beavis and Butthead because that was a thing too, because everyone was like, oh, it's so disgusting. These are disgusting characters saying disgusting things. And, she was told not to like that, so she didn't, and she didn't want you to like it. My parents had the same thing with Ren and Stimpy. They would let me stay up super late watching, horror movies or just whatever, but God forbid they ever caught Ren and Stimpy. They were like, that's disgusting, and would turn it off because they were told that was, terrible and gross.
I wonder if I have a slightly more, if my mother did a great thing without realizing it, that I have a more grounded, healthy, liberal view of sex and the female body, because I was seeing sex scenes and titties at 8. Though maybe she was trying to scare you. Maybe she's like, well, if you have sex in these movies, you die.
Now that is kind of a trope. Like, any character who engages in any, and that's actually, I guess that's another thing, that's another facet of this, that any character who has sex in a horror movie, except for the newer movies that are more self-aware, is going to meet a grisly end. There's this entire push in culture to demonize any kind of sexual activity.
Sure, definitely. And the thing that's the most discouraging about this movie and in those larger themes is that, our teenage protagonist here, Peterman, he's in a pretty normal, stable relationship with a girl who refuses to have sex with him. It's like a lot of teenagers. It's like, he has that. when he goes and sees her. It is more about the conversation, and they're helping each other with homework, going to the swim meets. It's like if only his parents had maybe focused on what they said they were going to do and hoping that he has healthy relationships. Well, he already does, and his relationship is faltering, and no one decides to help him with that. No one can just have a little conversation with him, like, hey, how are things going with Mandy, or whatever his girlfriend's name is. Like, Amy. She goes to church a lot. Like, how do you feel about that? How are her parents? Like, is she? What do you guys do together? Is she nice to you? Have you ever talked about bringing your relationship to another level? Like, these kind of things would have made for a much less sensational movie, but much more effective parenting, I think, because he already had the foundation for a healthy relationship that they thought that porn would destroy. So it's like, you know, help him where you can, not just by freaking out. And it got worse and worse and worse. Every single time he had a little trust, he was looking up porn on the school computer. He's looking up porn on his girlfriend's PDA, which, did anybody have PDAs?
I don't know. Rob, let me advance the plot, and we'll go right into that. We'll discuss that. The brother, the little brother, ends up blowing the whole cover because he ends up stealing some of the porn from his brother's computer. Because
he's nine. He can't be trusted.
Specifically, Virgin Vaginas, which is written in block letters on CDR. So there's a
who
big
labels
thing.
Their porn CDs?
Yeah, right? Why would
amateurs
you label it?
Who are nine. God.
Yeah.
You have nine-year-olds.
You gotta label that shit Switchfoot.
No, man, you gotta go with
I
the green.
I prefer Green Day.
Gotta go with the green.
Gotta go with the green.
So
Green Day rules. God.
The little brother dives on the grenade. He says, no, he didn't show it to me. I found it myself on his computer. So Justin is safe for a little while, but his addiction picks up. And as Rob was starting to say, he's stealing his parents' credit card. He's going to these really shady internet cafes, which look like back rooms of hardware stores. He's looking at the library. He's on his girlfriend's Palm Pilot looking it up. And Rob, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, it just kind of, this is the point where we do see it control his life. I mean, he's not doing good at swimming anymore. And I like how this was one of the best parent fights for me, is because, like, there's a very weak kind of subplot in which mom was a kick-ass swimmer too. And like, oh, dad, my trophy got put right next to mom's. Like, that was so awesome. Like, it doesn't really mean much to the plot except for this one argument after he just bites it at his swim meet and you know, runs out of gas, as dad says. And again, dad is trying to make excuses and concessions for his son, trying to say it's not all that bad. And mom's like, no, I knew something else was going on. And he's like, stop trying to make him be like you. And it's
again,
like that kind of takes a really kind of harsh turn because it's like now
– this dad has a really realistic response here because it's not like he, you know, failed it's not like he got like a 1,000 on the SATs or something. He failed like a statewide championship for swimming and gotten third.
He plays third.
So he's the
third state.
Fastest high schooler in the state.
Yeah,
it's not the end of the world.
And
it's,
her argument,
you know what it
back?
Is? It's the teaching Mrs. Tingle thing of like, well, he's not the fastest swimmer in the world in the state, so he's not going to get the scholarship and be able to go to college. Like,
yeah, that's
really,
that was her argument back.
Yeah,
that was her argument back.
He's
not
going to
get into a good school now because he can't swim, and that was all he had. That was all he could fall back on.
Yeah.
I was like, that's kind of harsh too. That his only way into a school was like,
that's the other thing. It's like, well, we're admitting that we're such shitty parents that we haven't, like, he's neglected his grades in favor of swimming. You know, like, they didn't come out and say it, but that's really what's going on.
Yeah,
well, I guess they knew he wasn't going to be like valedictorian.
Yeah,
he wasn't going to get a full ride unless he got a full ride swim scholarship or something.
The biggest problem with this is that this movie lacks any semblance of nuance. Like, there's a decent cautionary tale you can work into this that, like, don't let something that's even harmless rule your life to the point where it causes you to, like, you know, start fucking up at things you actually enjoy doing that ruins your relationships. But it's handled with the subtlety of a bowl in a china shop. You know, it's a sledgehammer constantly hitting you in the head. Like, porn is bad. Porn is bad. Don't watch porn. It's going to destroy your life.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just so fucking stupid.
This movie is the story of two parents realizing that one of their kids is going to be a fuck-up the rest of his life. Like, Justin is going to be living in their house until he's 30, and then he's going to keep coming back and trying to get money off of them. And they're just, you can see it, the realization in them, and they're just like, oh, we got to put all our eggs into the young one, or else we're fucked. Like, that's this movie, is they're realizing
it's like,
that.
Yeah. It was like Jesse Pinkman's family, like, they gave up on him and just started to go all to the younger brother, the overachiever. They had to refocus once his swimming dreams got, not that Pinkman had swimming dreams, but, yeah, it's like this, like, clean-cut, nice, happy suburban family. Which, another thing I thought was funny is that in every scene of the neighborhood, they live in, like, nice suburbia, but then when he goes out on his own, he's, like, suddenly, like, in the city streets. Like, I feel like this movie took place in two totally different places. It's like, Mom, I'm going for a walk, and then all of a sudden, he's, like, downtown.
It's just...
I just thought that was a little weird, too. But.
It's also just amazing to me, though, that, like you're right. I mean, again, you're saying the lack of subtlety in this movie, because he goes from being like this normal kid, great swim team member, like totally family oriented, happy, loves his girlfriend, wants to have sex, sure, because what teenage boy doesn't want to like get it in? But he's like, okay, I'm willing to wait. I think it's really cool that you have faith, blah, blah, blah. And then he just goes to like this, you know, there's a part where he gets to the swim team and he's tired. Like, he's clearly been staying up all night, which his parents have failed to notice. They're so worried about him, yet they don't wake up in the middle of the night and find him just, like, sitting there, like,
realistically fapping away like a monkey.
Yeah, hunched over on the computer. You know, his mom, who, come on, like, let's all get real here. She's totally a snoop. You know that the minute the kids are out of the house, she's snooping through all their drawers trying to make sure that they're not back to the porn.
She's like one of those moms that's like, oh, I'm just putting away your laundry.
Yeah, but she doesn't find
the
drawers and under your bed and in your closet. And
she
like-
doesn't find this giant stockpile of caffeine drinks and go, hey, there's a problem here because now you're not sleeping and you're becoming moody and aggressive. And then he, like, snaps on his teammates. Like, his girlfriend confronts him and she's like, look, I found all this porn that you put on my PDA, you idiot. And then she's like, it's over. And then, you know, his teammates are like, what's up, man? What's going on? He's like, just back the fuck off. I hate all of you. Like, totally loses it. Just completely.
He's like, screw all
it.
You guys.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about it,
it doesn't help that they make fun of him for being into the wrong kind of porn.
Yes,
well, no, that's not the same people. That's a different group of people.
Oh, you're right. Well, you're right. I guess the other scene is like at the school gym or something.
The other scene was like right around this time, though. It was like a little bit before this when he tries to be cool. He's like, oh, hey, man, like you showed me some porn. I'm about to show you some porn. And the guy's like, ah, man, you're sick. Like he takes, you know.
It's not even bondage.
They call him, like,
the
leather boy or something.
They call him leather boy.
The girl is wearing, like, a leather bra or something.
No, here. So the picture they show is, like, the picture they show is basically, like, if you've ever seen, like, a cheap Halloween costume of, like, Catwoman where it's, like, that really shitty black pleather that looks like it's just going to fall apart. They have, like, there's a couple girls wearing that and it's, like, it says, like, bondage on it. And then the guy who showed him porn in the first place, this cool, like, football jock or whatever, who's like, oh, man, you're cool, swim boy. You should hang out with us because for some reason I've taken you under my wing and come to my party and see this porn. You know, he tries to be cool back, like you were saying, and he's like, oh, look at the stuff I found. And, of course, like, that pushes the line. Again, this warped view of sexuality, like, if you have any kind of slight fetishism, you are a total fucking freak. Like, you can't be a girl and like porn. You have to be a girl and be disgusted by porn, A. B, if you like anything that is outside, like, straight vanilla girl on... Well, I guess girl on girl is kind of straight vanilla in today's society.
Not in this movie, it's not. It has
not in this
man,
movie.
One man, one woman missionary style with a crucifix above the bed in marriage trying to produce a child.
I agree with that, but I mean, the other teenage boys are like, oh, I'm willing to see two teenage... You know, or two college-age co-eds making out. Ugh, that's so hot. Like, teenage guys are like, oh, that's just normal. That's what porn should be. I don't want to see any penises up in my porn. And, but of course, the minute you add a little black shitty pleather to it, it's like, oh, you're fucking warped, man. You're disgusting.
Yeah.
So then the docs decide.
So he becomes like an outcast. He becomes a pariah. He's the perv. He's a freak now.
Because, again, this isn't, like, a cautionary tale for people who would be going through this. This is a, like, warning call for aged housewives who should avoid, you know, who should watch their sons like a hawk so that they don't end up having their lives.
And I think they probably already do, and they just need one more reason to do so.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. Well, I saw a movie that was very compelling about internet pornography addiction.
Well, this movie is made...
And then it just goes from there.
This movie is made for the character of Kelly Lynch's friend. We meet her very briefly. She says that, oh, yes, my husband went through a porn addiction. It ruined our marriage. And she talks to Kelly Lynch. A mowage.
No, stop.
No, let me finish. Fuck you. Really, let me finish. Because she says, she was like, he wouldn't be intimate with me anymore. And I tried spicing it up in the bedroom. And when I finally confronted on it, he just went into the family room where the computer is. And it's like,
dun, dun, dun.
It's like these people don't have the self-awareness to look in the mirror and be like, maybe I am doing something wrong. Like, it's entirely possible, just, hey, maybe this is going to sound kind of like sexist or misogynist, but this woman came off as this total, like, frigid, fucking, like, I am always right, holier than thou, like, bitch.
And like, I mean, she did, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Like, they're really,
but she's like the voice of reason. So, like, what does that say about this movie that they're portraying the voice of reason as, you know, cold-blooded? She's a cold-blooded bitch.
Okay.
Well, the problem is that they're also portraying the real voice of reason, which is the dad, as this, like, I don't know, as a bad father for not agreeing that porn is a bad thing.
They do, and, okay, here, two things, or not, well, several things. Anyway, so I agree with you, Chris, in that... I feel like it, you know, partially could definitely have been this woman's fault. I have heard of people with porn addictions. I don't know what their marriages were like, so I can't say that there wasn't something with the marriage that wasn't right, and that's why a guy would choose porn over his wife. I think there's also the problem with porn addictions in that watching the same stuff or having the same sex isn't enough for you anymore, and you have to keep pushing it and finding a new stream and finding a new thing. Yes, exactly. And I think that is a problem, because eventually you are going to make your partner so uncomfortable because you're pushing them to do things they don't want to do because you are not satisfied. There is that problem. But, I mean, you're right. I mean, she definitely could have asked her husband rather than, like, spice it up on her own. She could be like, what turns you on? What do you want me to do for you? Or maybe he just didn't find her physically attractive anymore, and that was why their marriage dissolved.
God forbid two adults who happen to be married to each other actually communicate to try and figure out.
Oh my god! That's the fucking Cosmo age that we live in, where anytime someone writes into Cosmo, the question is like, "Well, check for these signs. If you see these signs, then maybe he's looking elsewhere. Just fucking talk to him. Don't 20 sex tips to spice up your bedroom life. Like, slip a finger in his asshole while you're blowing him. Like,
oh,
no,
god. Wait, really?
Yeah, that's a real thing. Cosmo fucking hates when couples communicate, and they're also not
because then they'll start reading Cosmo.
Extremely vanilla, transphobic, homophobic, blah blah blah. But Cosmos hate when two couples try. They just don't believe that you can talk to the person you're in a relationship with. You should just be able to read them or smell their fucking pheromones. Sorry, my ex used to get Cosmo, and I used to read it when I was shitting, and I just took the angriest shits for like 2 years.
That's how you really feel, Chris.
I'm going to say that the real issue with this movie, well, with this boy, with what happens to his life, is not porn addiction. It's his obsession with another girl in his school that kind of fucks up his whole life. I mean, he questions his morals for her. He dumps, you know, he basically breaks stuff with his girlfriend because he's... So his real porn addiction starts when he starts looking at this website for a girl in his school that he saw at a party who was giving him, like, the come have sex with me eyes pretty much from the moment she saw him. And he sees her at all these parties, and no matter what porn site he goes to, he always comes back to hers. And when he gets in trouble in the school library for looking at porn, it's her site that he's looking at. He always comes back to her, and then she comes in really as this kind of force. I'm not really blaming this on her, but, you know, whatever. So he goes to his girlfriend. He tries a last-ditch effort to get his girlfriend have sex with her. Or him, sorry. Him. And that doesn't work. So he's like, you know, fuck you. I don't know why you won't just give it up, you stupid Christian bitch. And he moves on to the sure thing. Except when he gets to the sure thing, he can't do it because he realizes it's not what he wants. He realizes, like, the culmination of him looking at porn and everything else, you know, has reached this boiling head where he can finally have sex, and he doesn't want it because he never really wanted it in the first place. He never wanted those girls. He never wanted all that thing. He just got caught up in it because it was new and exciting and weird, and he just figured out he had testosterone coursing through his veins or something.
He treats sex very strangely, wherein he wants to have it with the Christian girl, but when Monica, the cam whore, twice, she tries to initiate with him, and he gets really freaked out and runs away.
Sexual repression.
Yeah. The problem is clearly this kid, but also the script is really inconsistent, I feel.
Yeah.
Again, like, if we didn't have this one scene, which I guess we've gone past at this point, of the friend of the mom talking to her about how porn ruined her marriage, the whole moral of this movie isn't that porn ruins lives, it's that, you know, sexual repression ruins lives. And that, you know, you do kind of want to have a more... You want to have communication in your relationships, that you don't end up in a situation like the main character does.
I don't necessarily agree with you that it's sexual repression, though, in total sense, because when he is with this girl, Monica, who's basically like, I'll have sex with you, whatever, I don't care. Like, she can clearly tell he's a virgin. He's super nervous, doesn't know how to act around her, and she digs it because she's like, I'm getting off on the fact that, like, I get to take your virginity. You know, he has the choice to do it, and then he, you know, as stupid as it sounds, but for him it matters that he sleeps with someone who's important to him. And he's like, I can't do this. This isn't right for me. And I don't think that's sexual repression. I think that's him making a choice. And
no, that, you're right about that scene, but I think it's all the stuff that's preceding that that's the bigger issue of, like, you know, all his roughly equivalent to wet dreams, all his, like, fantasies and stuff like that. It's not something that somebody who is just, like, you know, it really feels like somebody who is just discovering the other sex for the first time.
I agree with you, but I think the real problem is, like, you know, he meets this girl who tempts him, basically, and he, I don't think, had been tempted in that way before, and it scares him, and he goes through a really shitty phase. But really, the part that ends poorly for him, the part that really fucks up him for, like, a solid second there, is when he is put in this situation, like, I can have sex right now, and he chooses not to. And that's what gets him in trouble. Like, it's not the porn
addiction.
The girl is
real.
Yeah,
I completely agree. Again, that's something where the movie kind of screws itself. Because, you know, going back to when the parents were talking, if you want to portray this as a conflict of having a... like, having a relationship that isn't just built around sex, and, you know, having a relationship that is just built around sex, you're, you know, then show the two sides, and show them in a way that makes, that's intelligent. Don't show one of the options as this, like, you know, kind of a harpy, and don't show the other side as being this, like, vile temptress.
Yeah, but I don't think you can show both those sides with a virginal teenage boy who's just discovering his hormones. Like, I'm sorry, but a 15-year-old boy doesn't have the emotional capacity to really investigate the two sides of that coin and figure out which one works best for him.
And that's what I thought was weird about this whole scenario, is that how often is it that the girl that you're seeing on your little softcore porno sites is a girl that you know in real life?
That's
and
true.
Who is obviously interested in coming on to you. Like, that's super weird, is that he... And I thought, maybe this is the... you know, whenever we do something like this and we all unanimously say that this movie's a piece of crap, we... or at least I always try to think of something that I'm like, okay, well, the movie did this pretty well. And I thought that this was a very interesting idea, and I don't know if this was done on purpose or just to give us the awkward, almost sex scene with him... and what was her name? Julia, Shannon, something or other later
Monica,
in the movie.
Monica.
Yeah. So later on in the movie, she's the one that's very interested in sex and, you know, does things on camera. But he has a chance to actually have sex with this girl that he's seeing an image of. He's looking at pictures of her, not the real her. And there's actually kind of a cool part where he's in the library and we're kind of at like section 8 of 11 here. He has been banned from his computer. His computer's been taken out of his room. Internet has been shut off. You know, his parents are trying to come down on him for watching too much porn. So he goes to the school, and he, you know, just because he's a youth, he's able to bypass the firewall or whatever they call it. And he starts
hack
the firewall. And he starts looking at images of porn. But who does he look at? He's looking at, like, basically cleavage shots of a girl who is sitting 5 feet away from him in the moment where he's looking at her, like, licking her lips and, like, grabbing her boobs. And that's, like, a very weird – it just made me feel real – like, I thought they were maybe trying to touch on something greater about, like, the power of the image of porn versus the person of porn, because here she is, like, sitting in the library looking at a book. She's not really coming onto him in real life, but he's watching her come onto the camera through the camera coming onto him.
Yeah, no, I think it was just bullshit plot convenience.
I agree.
I think I'm giving him too much credit, but I think it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, I think you were.
I think you're giving it too much credit, but I think I think it is saying something, and it's back to what I was saying before, that there's two views of women's sexuality in this movie. There is his good girl girlfriend, and if he had stayed the right course and stayed with her and been patient and been happy, he wouldn't have deviated onto this path. And then there's the hypersexual classmate who, when he sees her, you know, for the first time, and she gives him that look, and then he starts to see the porn in her website, it ignites something in him, and he's faced with this temptation and this choice. And the hypersexual, outside of, you know, not only is it, you know, outside of marriage and outside of a relationship and outside of love, she's also dating somebody else. She's dating somebody else and trying to have sex with him. And it's like, these are the two views of sexuality. There's the good girl Christian, wait for it, I'll be here to support you, I've always got your back, I'll love you no matter what. And the, I just want to fuck you, dude. I just want to fuck you, and then if you don't want to fuck me, I'm going to ruin your life. Like, well, those are the two views of women in this movie. And that's exactly what the problem is. Amy, that's the problem in this movie.
Amy clearly also doesn't just represent one view of women. Amy also very clearly represents Jesus. And, like, this movie is not far removed from, like, one of those chick tracts, like the Jack Chick.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
the,
and that's the thing.
No,
the
there's
characters
a complex.
Are caricatures.
No, this is it's a complex. It's the Madonna complex.
Exactly.
Guys don't want necessarily a virgin, but they really want to. Not guys in general. I should not say all of you, but I mean it is a Madonna complex. Madonna, you know, Amy is the virgin mother. She's the sweet. You know, she's nurturing. She is good. She's inherently good. And on the flip side, you have, you know, Monica, who's basically your. You're Mary Magdalene before she gets saved. She is a prostitute. She is, you know, she's before the redemption.
The difference is that Mary Magdalene didn't get Jesus crucified, because what happens after Justin turns down Monica is she freaks the fuck out, and in the jump the shark moment of this movie, looks in the mirror, heaves a couple times, and bashes her head into the sink until she's bleeding.
Yeah.
And then tells
and
all of her friends
off.
That Justin beat her up. Whoa.
She tells her boyfriend and all the jock friends that she, you know, she gives herself a black eye too, which we don't get to see in the movie, which I feel really robbed of that scene. But you see her in the diner, and then this basically takes us full circle to the end. I'll just say that Justin gets beat up pretty hard. They kick him a lot. And then he gets himself up. He goes back to the pool, which is like another one of those things in the movie that's kind of used as like a... There's a lot of references to religion here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of references to religion, but there's also this kind of idea that the pool is his...
is basically
like his church. He comes there and he finds himself. He centers himself. He finds what he needs in that moment. He can ground himself there. And he comes to the pool and he puts his arm out Jesus style. He spreads his arms, seriously, just, you know, like going up on the cross now, kids.
Scott Stapp style.
He does. He Scott Stapps it
with
and face dives.
His arms were wide open.
His arms were. And this brings, this is the first thing we see in the movie, but this brings us to this moment that I'll let one of you tackle when he's in the pool.
His last interaction with the Christian girlfriend.
I do want,
because like when
take
he was
that.
Talking to her, the whole movie is him trying to do homework with her. He always has a history paper due. He's always at the library. Like he's trying to figure it out. And his last conversation with her is very
library.
Interesting because it maybe like insinuates he's going to change. He tells his mother, you know, I do have a problem. I do need help, and I'm going to get it. I can't do it alone. And you would think he's probably saying, Mom, I need your help. But she's like, oh, good to hear, son. Well, I'm going to leave you here. Let me know when I have to come and get you. And then what does he do, right? He goes up to his kind of ex-girlfriend's house, and they have a very brief conversation. And anybody remember what he told her he was going to start to do?
Go to church.
Go to church.
Exactly. Go to church.
Yeah. Do you
believe they talked about that. They had talked about that in the beginning of the movie, and you're right, because he had to do something radical, Rob. He had to be radical.
And actually, yeah, you're right. It is it's like the most radical thing a 16-year-old could do is like accept Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, and this movie is there to let us know, because she goes, well, that's pretty radical, and he says, I need to get radical, because early in the movie, she's like, maybe you'll go to church with me sometime, and he's like, well, why would I do that? And she's like, well, when you go to church, you like – think about things that are more important and stop thinking about things that aren't important. And it's like, as she's saying that, it's showing him like clicking around on porn sites. So he is, you know, he has decided to seek the light of the Lord.
I really thought this was going to take an American History X turn for a second, by the way.
He's just going to die.
Yeah. Because they show him having this reconciliation with his mother where he's like, Mom, I'm sorry. I have a problem. You're right. You were right the whole time. I can't face this alone. And she's like, oh, hug, son. We'll get you help. And then he goes to his girlfriend and she's like, I can't be your friend right now, but if you get help and if you come to church with me, I'll always be there to support you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, he's making amends in his life. And then he gets the shit beaten out of him. And I was like, oh, my God, this is going to American History X all over the place. But I should have known better because it's a Lifetime movie.
Well, there's one thing.
See, now that would have been something to look forward to. If the end of this movie is just him getting curb stomped.
There's one thing. I mean, I'm sure the movie intended him to be very sincere in saying this, but how I read it, he basically asks Amy, you know, can we get back together? And she's like, fuck no. And then he's like, you know, I do think we should go to church together sometimes. The way that it was worded and the order that it came in,
he's just trying to get back in her pants.
Yeah, I don't know if he was ever legitimately serious about that.
He did start, I mean, you're right. I mean, I think that was definitely manipulation, but I think he started off not by saying, he said, can we just go out to talk sometime? I know it won't be like a date or anything. And then she was like, I don't know about you. But yeah, she definitely immediately changes when she's like, oh, you want to go to church? Okay. Well, if you get that help that you're talking about, then maybe.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So that's where he leaves it with her. And like everything's hunky-dory. Unfortunately, his little ex-girlfriend won't go on a walk with him. So, and again, I don't know what he was trying to do, why he couldn't just call his mom to, like, she's got to only be a couple minutes away to turn around and come get him. He was denied.
Well, he needed to think about things.
I thought for sure he was going to go back to that, like, shady 7-Eleven and go to the back room and look at more porn. But no, he just decides to take a walk through the neighborhood, and then one of the other cool kids from school sees him at the gas station, and that's when shit gets real.
And then, yeah, we get to the point where he goes to the pool, he falls in, and he has this moment where his life flashes before his eyes, and he sees all the things that he loved in his life. He sees swimming, he sees his parents, he sees his brother, he even sees Amy, and then he decides, I'm not gonna drown, I'm gonna swim, and freeze frame, end of the movie. That's it. We don't see him getting any kind of help. We don't see the temptress getting any comeuppance. As far as we know, his life is still terrible. He probably
we don't even see
himself.
His mom come get him out of the pool and be like, "Oh my God, are you all right? You look terrible. Your face is fucking bloody."
This dude's life probably would have been better with him dead. Everyone in school thinks he's Leather Boy now. He has no girlfriend. He's going to get beaten up everywhere he goes and accused of some kind of abuse. His parents hate him. Like, maybe suicide was the right call.
this is that scene from It's a Wonderful Life where the angel shows up, but then realizes that, yeah, his life actually is, like, everybody in town is actually better off without him.
But we have to get the baptism metaphor. So,
Well, we couldn't end the movie without a metaphorical baptism and a cleansing of his internet pornography sins.
I have to say though that I'm really surprised because it is a Lifetime movie, because it is a movie geared at mothers, and because the whole movie does really play off the mother-son relationship. You know, it starts out being really strong. She really trusts him. She's so proud of him. All of that gets shattered. In the end, she's starting, like, they're starting to try to slowly put it back together. I was really surprised because they just have this kind of moment of him thinking about him and his mom swimming in the pool together. I was really surprised they didn't just bring it on home and have his mom actually, like, find him at the pool and be like, oh my God, my baby. And, like, scoop him up and him be like, oh, mom, I'm so sorry. And just cry into her shoulder. And that was how they would, like, go to black with it. Because I really thought that was how it would end because it was a Lifetime movie, but they failed.
Could you imagine how much worse for him it would be if his mother found him at the pool? She'd be like, oh, you're addicted to internet porn and now you're suicidal too? Like, yes. This would never leave the house again. Like, the movie could have been kind of sweet if it had just ended with him hopping on his enormous cell phone and being like, mom, I need a ride. Like, that would have been, like, in one scene, he could have worked on patching up the relationship with his mother. You know, he could have been like, you drop me off here, you're going to pick me up here. Like, I didn't lie to you. I didn't go, like, he lies to her after saying, I want to fix this. Even though it's, like, his Jesus moment, it's really not a good thing for him as a character, because if he had just picked up the phone, asked for a ride home, think of how many, you know, like, brownie points you would have gotten with mom. I dropped you off here. I picked you up here. It's exactly what you said you would do, and you did it. Jeez. As opposed to you broke into school and attempted suicide.
Well, actually, part, again, him straying from his mother's direct command is what got him beat up.
Kelly Lynch says when she drops him off at Amy's house, like, the worst thing is that I could always trust you. And then he
violates that trust again. Now,
Not even 5 minutes later, like, as soon as she drops him off, all he has to do is pick up the phone and give his mom a call. He would have saved himself an ass kick. And, like, now when he gets home, he has to explain, like, why he was beat up.
But at the same time,
pressed just because he found religion and wants to go to church with his sort of ex-girlfriend doesn't save the fact that he got his ass kicked. He's going to have to explain who did it to him and why.
Okay,
and
but
it's going to come out that the girl hit herself in the head. Well, why did you do that? Well, he wouldn't have sex with me. Well, what do you mean you went to her house to have sex? So now the girlfriend's never getting back together with him. The parents don't trust him. You were going to have premarital sex? Like, this kid made his life so much worse by not calling his mother.
You're right, but at the same time, you're also assuming that he knew he was going to get his ass kicked. I mean, Jesus. He doesn't know that he's going to be thrown up on the cross. Like, he has no idea that he might just be like, oh, shit, dude.
No, you're right.
Want to.
Yeah, he wasn't sitting at that diner going, one of you is going to beat the shit out of me.
But yeah, he was like, one of you will betray me, like, come kick my ass.
For all we know, he could have just been walking around the block to clear his head before calling his mom. He just so happened to pass a gas station that the dude was sitting at, and he was like, oh, fuck, it's Leather Man. We have to go kick his ass. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, who didn't have, like,
There's no way I think that he had any idea he was going to get beat up, but I think the movie is trying to show us, like, look what he did, and here's the consequence.
What I'm saying is, though, you've never had a moment in your life where you've had a shitty conversation with someone, you're like, I just need a minute to walk this off, to just, like, walk around the block.
Yes. My head.
I think that was all he was doing, was walking around the block, and then he was going to call his mom, but he didn't want to be like, mom, she wouldn't take me back. Like, he just needed a minute. He just needed a moment.
No, I mean, you're totally right about that, but I mean, in the context of the movie, he has one final chance to make up with his mom. Like, think of all the explaining he's going to have to do now, because he didn't call her for a ride home like he said he would. He got beat up. He broke into school. He jumped in the pool. And now he's got to walk home soaking wet with a black eye and a cut on his mouth. And then they're going to get into, well, why did you get that? Well, these guys beat me up. Well, why? Because this girl. So it's just like, he's got a pretty bad life after it ends.
I disagree also in the fact that even if his ass hadn't gotten kicked that night, the next day at school, his ass would have gotten kicked, and then he would have still had to have this conversation with his parents, like, why did they beat you up? Like, he still
That's true.
No matter what happened in his life, he would have gotten his ass kicked by this guy who thought he beat up his girlfriend.
It's Schrodinger's ass kicking. He's getting his ass kicked.
Yeah. No matter when it happens, it's going to happen.
What I thought was happening with the ending was when he popped out of the water, I expected it's a hard cut to, like, X months later and another swim meet and, like, everyone's there and cheering him on and Amy's there and cheering him on and he wins the big race at the biggest pool in town and, like, everything's happy again. Like, a future scenario. And it didn't. It just ended.
It does kind of have a leak ending.
I did see it ending either that way, Chris. I was with you there, but I really thought they were going to go for the mother-son, like, full reconciliation where she, like, came in and saw him battered and, like, in his pool, you know, because she understands. She's a swimmer. She gets it. She knows that sometimes you just got to go ground yourself in the pool. You got to, like, find your center. And, like, she would find him there and be like, oh, I knew you'd be her son, my poor baby. And then, like, I thought they were going to do, like, a lame-ass ending like that. I really thought they were going to go with it. But they didn't. You're right. It was just a kind of, well, he figured it all out. His head's in order now. Hooray for him.
Yeah, and he's got on the will to live. Him all by himself. Like, and that was kind of a bummer for me. Like, with zero support for any family, friends, God, church, he just jumps in the pool and figures it out all by himself. So it was like, what was the point of all of that? Like, if you got this kid away from a computer for 5 minutes, he'll figure out that maybe he doesn't need to just look at boobs all the time.
This movie, the first draft of this script was like 1,000 times shorter because there's a power outage 5 minutes into the movie. He has to spend a week without internet and everything's okay.
Yeah, exactly. If there had just been a power outage. But I guess that's pretty much it.
You guys also reminded me of something. This is another thing that I had a little gripe with. And this is, you know, this isn't even just the movie because I've had this conversation with some of my female friends, you know, about their views on porn. And everyone's allowed to feel about porn the way they want to feel about porn. That's fine. I get it. But, you know, there's this part in the beginning of the movie where she's talking to the dad. The mom's talking to the dad and she's like, I found him looking at porn. And the dad's like, oh, whatever. He's a teenage boy. All teenage boys want to look at big boobs. And at the end of the conversation, she, like, grumps and, like, puts her, like, crosses her arm and goes, I didn't say they were big boobs. And he goes, well, they always are. And it's just, like, that view, too, of, like, taking offense as a woman to porn. And, like, I get, like, you know, I'm not going to say, like, porn makes me proud. It doesn't. But at the same time, you know, feeling bad about your body or feeling like these, you know, like having to hate on these women's big breasts because you feel inadequate in your own breasts doesn't make any sense. If you are with a dude and he's touching on your boobs and he seems happy, then he's happy. He's not faking it. He's not wishing they were full of silicone. If he's touching them and thinking they're great, just accept your body and love your boobs and get over it. There you go.
Well, on that note, would anyone recommend this fucking movie?
On the note of be proud of your boobs.
Yeah. No, I'll say, I'll speak for all of us when I say this movie is evil. It demonizes women who are okay with their sexuality. It demonizes a very natural thing of guys, of basically just puberty. It demonizes puberty and the idea that guys can look at boobs in an innocent way.
Okay, also, it also demonizes the fact that women are not allowed to look at porn. Fuck you. I'm allowed to look at porn.
No, they're not. You guys should think it's disgusting.
No.
It also demonizes that any woman who is okay with her own body and showing it off is like this vile slut who's going to fake getting the shit beat out.
Ruin the family.
Monica should not be... your example of that, because Monica clearly had a lot of psychological issues and a lot of daddy issues.
But the problem is she's treated that way as like an exemplar of the of that, you know, like you said, the Madonna whore complex.
Yeah, you're right.
The movie also takes a blaming the it gives precedence to victim blaming and like false accusations in regards to abuse and rape, which is disgusting.
Agreed.
Fuck this movie.
Yeah. That there's no retribution. You never have any reconciliation for this girl faking an assault upon herself. Faking that someone beat her up is kind of horrifying, and that she never gets caught for it because It's the like same as when women claim rape when they want to revenge on a guy.
Exactly. And that's using her sexuality in more than one way. She's saying, oh, now I'm the vulnerable woman that got beat up by this guy.
Well, and but not only...
The movie misses the message again.
But it also completely, like Chris was saying, when you do that as a woman, another PSA to all you women out there, if you ever think about doing this, I might have to beat you over the face because you're taking away actual credibility to real victims when you fake an assault on yourself, when you make up an assault or yell rape when nothing, you know, no rape happened, you are kind of hurting every victim that actually ever had to go through that by faking something like that, which is pretty horrible.
This movie's not Birth of a Nation, but it's still pretty fucking scummy. It's a bad movie, not in how it's made, in its message. It is a mean, evil, dirty movie, and I'm glad that it wasn't on Netflix so that they got some money when we watched it. It's just, it's available on streaming sites. You can see it if you want, but don't. Fuck this movie.
Yeah, I think this is a unanimous not recommend, right, guys?
Yeah. There's no reason.
Is anyone going to recommend this?
No.
Well, that's Cyber
Unless you're in a podcast and
that's this shitty movie.
It's like
thanks for listening to us with our superior
We all apologize for not being fun this talk and just talking about sexuality and terrible issues.
Sorry for being really, really angry the past hour and a half that we talked.
We're all depressed now and we all hate our bodies and ourselves for liking porn.
Speaking of yourselves, I'm going to go jerk off immediately after this. I'm going to jerk off to this podcast afterwards.
I'm going to go look up pictures. I'm going to go listen to some Green Day because fuck Switchfoot.
You got to go with the green.
Got to go with the green.
Got to go with the green.
At that point, it's not even an issue of Green Day or not Green Day. It's just fuck Switchfoot.
It's like Green Day rules. Secular versus non-secular pop punk.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that was probably one of the few times I really laughed in this movie. That was supposed to be a genuine laugh.
That was a pretty good one.
I'm going to go try to download that fake Linkin Park song.
I'm going to go lay in a pool and pretend to drown myself until I find the realization to all my problems.
All right. So if you want to get in touch with us, NetflixMartyrs@gmail.com, at NetflixMartyrs on Twitter.
I should probably update that. Also, a shout out to another Chris who made us a very awesome thing. He made us a flyer that has our name on it and also has like one of those little codes you scan with your phone. He's awesome. So thank you for making that for us.
Thank you. That's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you can like us on Facebook. Tell all your friends.
QR codes, I think they're called.
Play it in the car with your friends while they're driving in places. And they'll be like, what is this? And you'll be like, shut up. And then
you can get angry with us and then just hate the rest of the car ride.
Exactly. And that's Cyber Seduced. We'll see you next time, guys.
Then you'll alienate your friends, get beaten up, and end up drowning yourself in a pool. It all ends in a pool.
For Jesus.
Amen.
This movie isn't about
Oh, Pam.
Face of this movie.
Am I lagging?
No.
Yeah, I heard a lag right there.
Pam, you're getting choppy. Say something. Wait,
sorry.
Just say something.
It's her computer retaliating for all the breathing jokes.
Yeah, you might have just had some lag. Go continue.
Okay.
Stop looking at internet pornography, man.
It's ruining the podcast.
Rob. It's internet porn.
Our podcast is ruined because of internet porn.
Well, what do you mean? Green Day rules. Hey, guys, what do you think? Green Day or Switchfoot?
Switchfoot for all you boys. Gotta go with Green.
With their parents and porn ever?
I caught my dad watching porn. Awkward.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Oh, I'm kind of glad that's never happened to me.
Super awkward.
I think Pam wins right off the bat.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Do I have to really to tell this?
Yeah, okay. Tell the story.
Yeah, that was pretty good, Pam.
When I was in middle school and high school, my mom usually worked super late, so it was usually just my dad and I in the house. And, you know, he had gone to bed and I was upstairs and I had to go into their room for something. And I thought he was asleep. So I just kind of like opened the door to like go in to get something from my mom's closet or something. And he was like, I didn't see anything, thank Christ, because I would be fucking traumatized. But his laptop was open and he like did the immediate like pull the covers up over himself. And it was just, I was like, oh my God, sorry. And it was like in a movie where you know that you just witnessed something horrifying. And all I could do was like stumble backwards and like pull the door shut with me. And super awkward. And my father and I have never talked about that moment.
Your face was like the Nazis at the end of Raiders.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what my face looked like.
just
I
melted off temporarily.
It. I couldn't. I just tried to block out that hole. Thank God. Could you? Oh God. Oh,
good thing we brought it up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm really glad.
Yeah, we just unrepressed all those memories.
I'm glad that my mother believes in comforters and like top sheets and all of that stuff. So there was lots of stuff to pull up and block my view, because I would have been a different person today had that not been there. I would have been scarred in a mental institution. Or maybe I would have been a sex worker, because they're all damaged goods, right? That's what I learned from watching
Lifetime. Without family support.
Yeah, without family love and support. So there you go. There's an awkward parents and porn story.
Yeah, I think you win that
one. Well, has anyone else has anyone like been to a porn party like in these movies?
That's a no.
I know that. I heard you talk about it before.
Well, I actually, there was one other time that I watched porn in a group. It was in a freshman year of college. Someone got their hands, and this was like when, 2005, around when this movie came out. Like, this was when, I guess, porn just started getting inventive with what they could do on DVD. And someone came across a choose-your-own-adventure porn.
Oh, sweet.
What?
Yeah, you could pick your positions, how it starts, how much foreplay, how you finish. And we were just watching it and fucking drinking beers and laughing. And the part that really killed all of us is I guess they really wanted to keep continuity and not switch out dicks, because I guess they couldn't get the person to come multiple times on camera because all of the cum shots were CGI.
Oh, really?
Awesome. Yeah, so the girl just had to like shake her face and tongue, but like nothing was really hitting her. It was just kind of like hitting the air. It's like Birdemic of porn, basically.
That's amazing, and I wish I'd seen it. Also have a porn party story. Why does that I feel like I am the whore of the Madonna horror complex of our show. This makes me feel sad. But anyway, in high school for AP English class, so a bunch of I was gonna use names, but only Chris would know who these people are, and I kind of feel bad shouting them out. So that's Caitlin was among them.
You're gonna tell me after this.
Oh no, you know what, I'm just gonna use names. Siobhan, Caitlin, Amanda, and I were all at my house, and we had not read any of the books that we needed to for AP English. So our plan was to just like marathon all of the movie versions of these books, like back to back to back, to have some idea of what they were about. So we started with Tess of the D'Urbervilles. Got about 15 minutes in, got super bored of Tess of the D'Urbervilles, turned it off, happened to be on HBO. What happened to be on HBO? Porn. So we just started watching that, and we ended up making pudding, and then we just ate pudding and watched porn at my house.
Is that a euphemism?
No, I mean, it's not even like a kinky story. It's just, we just had like this big bowl of like vanilla pudding, and you know, we didn't like lick it off each other. We were just had spoons, we're eating it from a bowl, and we're watching
porn.
Disappointing.
We're
like, this is weird. Actually, I have a lot of really weird stories. I'm just gonna stop myself here. I'm gonna just end it right now.
A wise decision. I think the closest I've ever come to that was when I was at like in sort of an after party after a somebody's 21st party, and it was like, I think it was like 1 or 2 in the morning. And like those of us who were still awake and bored basically just ended up putting on Cinemax while we were playing poker.
Nice.
And this sticks out in my mind because what happened to be on was a porno called Kinky Kong, which is literally a King Kong parody that includes a scene of a woman getting shoved into a CGI King Kong's underwear.
Nice.
It was weird.
Oh wow!
It was definitely not an enriching experience. That's for sure.
I saw a softcore porn once about this woman who turned she would have sex with people and then turn into this giant mutant insect and then kill them. And I forget what it was called, but I think it was also on Cinemax.
Was it called Species?
No.
That's kind of what happens.
It is kind of like what happens in that, but she's always kind of like a little bit of a creepy alien. Like, her tongue is weird and she can fling it out the back of people's heads. No, she like turns into like a giant bee. She looks like a giant bee drill for anyone who knows what that is. And hopefully no one else knows what that is.
A bee drill? I got you.
I believe that's Pokemon number 142.
Does the bridge of your glasses have tape on it?
Another quick one. Caitlin and I in an AC hotel room watching Real Sex with my mother. Super weird, but also kind of funny. And that's my last awkward porn and parent story.
I mean, I've never really been to a porn party, but I have been to a porn social gathering, I guess.
Oh.
Being like a sophomore in high school, ex-girlfriend at the time had a friend who was super weird, and she had a super weird boyfriend. So just because I was trying to get on, you know, her good side, we were young and just started dating, I said, well, okay, we'll have them over. So these two people come over, you know, the super, like, Hot Topic mall kids, right? And which is not to say I wasn't too far from that myself when I was 15 or 16, but they bring over a movie that the boy, I'll just call him Jay, and I'll just call her S, right? So Jay brings over this movie, and he stole it from his father. So first of all, you have to acknowledge that he knows his dad is watching this because he got it from his dad's private stash. And I remember the name of this movie to this day, and I am not even joking when I'm telling you it was called Hot and Kinky, Cock Crazy Asians.
Nice.
And it was on VHS. Wow. It was a VHS tape. And my ex's parents were like away at the time. It was like after school. So first of all, it's not even like evening and it's kind of dangerous. It's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Like, we're like making popcorn. We're like, all right, we're going to watch this movie in the basement. And I think we got about 25 to 30 minutes into it until we noticed that, first of all, there were bruises all over these poor girls. I'm talking like the size of your fist on the side of her leg. I'm like, why is she so bruised up? These girls are like beat up like a banana peel. And then I think this is what made us shut off the movie, besides the fact that we realized we were all terribly uncomfortable around the four of us watching Hot and Kinky Cock Crazy Asians, is that a fly, as a guy is hitting a girl from behind, the fly lands on her butt. The guy who's doing her is like, bum, 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 bum. And he's got his hands on her hips, and he just takes one hand off and just like smacks the fly and gets it and kills the fly on her lower back, upper butt, and then and leaves it there until he's done. Like, leaves the dead fly that he just squished on her. And we were just like, oh! And that was the first and last time I ever watched porn with other people. Thank you.
And now Rob's going to go drink that memory away.
I need to get rid of that one for good. I knew there was a reason that was like the deepest, darkest recesses of my mind. I get the fly, man. Like, why do you use that take? Why use that scene? You can't do it twice without a fly? You have to put the fly in the video? We've all had our weird experiences.
And all the time on this one. Great. That makes me feel awesome to myself.